Hello everyone, we're Superhero Stuff You Should Know, and if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance, we got action,
romance.
We got comedy, we got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance, what part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches, and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
Alright, so come on down to, wait, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
At Maximum Mediocrity, people say things like,
I don't dress like this on the regular basis. This isn't my, you know, pooping uniform. This is not
And they also say things like,
The nurses are usually either angels of mercy or whores.
Every episode is a new experience where you get to know people that aren't famous but should be.
Why am I facing Floyd Mayweather in the woods?
My co-host Morgan and I track down the people you didn't know you needed to hear from.
It's like hot sex in a mug.
We are the Maximum Mediocrity Podcast, and we are on all major podcasting platforms. We'll be waiting for you.
Hey, do you have an idea for a podcast but don't know where to start? Or do you have an already existing podcast that you want to take to the next level? Well, check out weknowpodcasting.com. From concept development to theme music to editing to logos, weknowpodcasting.com is a one-stop shop for all things pod. Don't hesitate to hit us up. We're very nice.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. This week we're talking about a film from the 50s, so you can figure out it's me. We're talking about House of Wax from 1953. And guys, I think Scott already knows this. Kyle, you probably know this too. This is like legitimately one of my absolute favorite movies of all time. Like, fucking love this movie. It was one of my earliest horror films. I talk about this all the time, but when I was a kid, I was kind of afraid to watch horror movies, but like the old classic movies felt safe. Like, it was like, oh, I can watch like Creature from the Black Lagoon and Wolfman because they're like old movies. And my grandfather would show me his tapes, and he gave me a VHS tape of House of Wax. I feel bad for the kids that my parents forced to hang out with me for my birthday because this was definitely a frequent Matt Kelly birthday sleepover watch that no one cared about but me. I stopped taking notes about 5 minutes in this movie because I'm like, what am I doing? I've seen this a thousand times. I could recite most of this movie. But the two things that I wrote down that felt important enough to call out is A, I fucking love the theme song to this movie. Like that, like, creepy
House of Wax.
Yeah, House of Wax. No, but you know what I mean? Like, the musical score, it's like this weird, almost theremin, but not theremin type sound that's kind of playing whenever the killer shows up that I love. And as a kid, for some reason, all of those melting faces at the beginning of the movie freaked me the fuck out. I did not enjoy watching that as a kid.
No, those were pretty fucking serious. Like, this is my first time watch. I've seen half of the remake, which doesn't matter either. But like, I have no real frame of reference here, right? Like, other than I don't even know what I thought House of Wax was.
Well, this is also a remake.
Yeah. Oh, is that right?
Yeah, it is.
Of a 1930s film called The Mystery of the House Museum.
Oh, I've seen that one. No, I haven't seen that one either. I don't know where I am, but I fucking love wax museums. I'll tell you what.
I think that this is why I like wax museums, because I was trying to piece it together, and I was the obnoxious brother. We went anywhere, and there was a Ripley's, believe it or not, within the vicinity. I was like, can we please go to the Ripley's? Because I just liked looking at all these weird wax statues of like what was supposedly a human anomaly, be it real or a complete forgery from Ripley to like draw people in. I was so obsessed with that stuff, and I think part of it is because like watching this movie gave me such a weird appreciation for how much work goes into building wax figures. Like, you got to find someone that looks like the person you want to make the wax figure out of.
Then you have to murder them.
Dip their body.
It's a very complicated process. In Pepto-Bismol, apparently.
There's something about this film where I need you two to let me know. Do I just love this because I have such a long time nostalgia goggle over my face for this? Or is this actually like a pretty good schlocky 1950s film?
This movie was a massive hit, so you're not wrong. Yeah. It made shitloads of money.
The good thing is that also had the 3D gimmick and Paddleball Patrick to like really bring it on home and fit three balls in his mouth, which I thought I was the only one who could do. but apparently he can do it very well.
So here's the other funny thing. Like I said, I watched this movie a lot. I didn't comprehend that it was originally shot to be in 3D until I was like well into college. And I was like, oh, of course.
I will say that they were a little more lax on the gimmicks of it than I expected.
Except for the paddleball guy.
For the fucking paddleball. And like a couple like maybe trying to break down the doors a couple times, right?
Yeah.
Like, but so they were relatively tame.
But I could see, when I think about this movie now in that lens of 3D, I can see how, like, that body falling down the elevator shaft in 3D in, like, 1953 would have been, like, super shocking. Or, like, even what I think is the best, even though it makes zero sense, zero fucking sense, but her shattering Vincent Price's face to reveal the burn victim skin underneath, like, that in 3D probably looked gnarly.
Yeah.
We won't question how he was wearing a wax mask that articulated so well, but then would just shatter on, like, one or two punches.
Yeah, don't worry about it. But it's truly such a classic fucking reveal. I loved it. I thought it was great. And it's edited the best that it could be for what that was. Like, not enough time for you to question it. You're just like, oh shit, she smashed his face. And then maybe a few minutes later you start to wonder.
And you're like, wait a second.
Wait a fucking second.
You got a Morticia Adams walking around in the first couple minutes of this movie.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, the girl that gets killed.
The man knows every name of every obscure fucker from a movie from the 70s on, apparently.
No, I had no idea. I just
Are you familiar with who Vincent Price is?
This is my first one. Price is Right. I loved the woman who was like who was semi Betty Boop.
That's who we're talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That was right. Morticia Adams as well.
Like,
I'm just gonna say, talk about a range. Like, plays Morticia Adams and plays like blonde, like you said, borderline Betty Boop character. Yeah. Like, that is that's a pretty
great
impressive.
You know, I was reading up on her a little bit. I've seen this movie before, and it's a little slower than my usual cup, you know. So I was kind of keeping myself busy while I was playing, and I was reading. I don't know if it was her IMDb or her wiki, but she was worried that she was gonna get typecast by doing the Addams Family as just doing, you know, horror, because that's what happened to the lady that did King Kong.
She has a great role. Like, I thought the character was awesome. I thought it was really fun. Especially because it comes in after the reluctant insurance money fight between Vincent Price and that guy, where he's just like, no, don't give me the insurance money. I'll fucking fight you for it. It's intense as shit. Like, there's a lot of fire. Doesn't completely change tonally, but her coming in, I was like, that's really interesting. And then later on, when we fucking meet an unrecognizable Charles Bronson, like, I was like, with then later on, whose bust of himself looks like John Cena, which is really weird.
How did you see him, though?
He didn't have hands to do this. That was the problem.
I'm very good at miming. He's,
Do you really want, to taste it?
But I did get a beer in honor of Charles Bronson's character, Igor, just called Big Idiot. Because he's just a big fucking, idiot.
I don't want to always be hedging in on Kyle's thing, but I wanted to bring a beer as well, but I didn't find one, so I instead brought a candle, since this is the House of Wax.
I love it.
I'll drink to that, Scott. And then you bring the Pepto-Bismol, Matt, like you said you would.
Oh, yes. Scott, I could bring that too. I'm pretty sure of the three of us, I drink gallons of it compared to it.
But I think that you're right, that opening fight scene is really intense. It does a thing that I think is important, which is like, you are supposed to kind of like Vincent Price. He seems like this, but he's also clearly insane. Like, he's having full conversations with these wax figures. Almost like seems like he has a pseudo sexual relationship with one of them.
Yeah.
Like, he seems slightly unhinged out the gate, and I think it makes it an easier pill to swallow that he would just turn to like full blown murderer with just like the little inconvenience.
Yeah, he's hanging on by a wick there.
Yeah,
he's,
like, yeah. Man, he's a powder keg that's gonna blow.
Oh my god,
it didn't feel like a totally like, I love when they set him up, when they set up Vincent Price characters to not be totally unhinged like right out the gate, but it just takes one thing. It's a major instance, but it just takes one thing.
That's yeah. just like it's, totally that's turn him. The Vincent Price in all
that's
of
the
us.
Price way.
Yeah, well, the price is and, right, and it's time to pay the piper.
Pay the price.
There's two things about Vincent Price's character in this movie I want to bring up. First of all, super ballsy move to A, murder your previous business partner, B, open a wing in your wax museum about recent deaths, and then C, just debut a wax figurine of your business partner. Like, at least the other ones, it's like, oh, I've hidden them to look like some. It's just like, no, this is fucking him.
Yeah, no, of all guys, like, fuck this guy.
And it's the perfect crime because no one's going to check the wax figures. The perfect crime.
Yeah, yep. 100%. Also, I know I can only speak for myself on this, but man, if that wax museum was like just a couple minutes down the street, I'd go pretty constantly.
Dude, I'd be bringing any visitor that ever came to visit me to that fucking wax museum, and then they never show up again. It's a great way to vent it, to sort through your friends.
Yeah, it's like, hey, do you want to see the wax museum of torture rooms?
Yeah, like, has there been besides like a Madame Tussauds? Has there been any other sort of like offshoot or off-brand wax museums that y'all have got? Or like, let's just fucking say like weird attraction. Right.
Well,
like,
I mean, I gotta give a shout out to our boy Chris La Martina. He's got a house of oddities that's moving to a different town.
I highly recommend if anybody ever gets out to Monterey, California, getting
a hand
Steinbeck. Job. get the hand job on the beach. Like, go to Big Sur and get real big. Sorry, that was fucking lame.
On Big Sur.
Actually, I have a question for you, Kyle, because I'm remembering you did live in California.
Yes.
And when I lived in California, I would walk to Amoeba from my house, which was not a short walk. When I would go on that walk, I would pass what I believe was called the Museum of Death in Los Angeles. Have you been to the Museum of Death, Kyle?
I have been to the Museum of Death. I went with my mom and sister. No, that's not true. No, I have been to that Museum of Death. Yes.
Every time I'd walk past it, I would have the same thought, which is, this seems like the spot in a horror movie where they're actually just murdering the people that walk into the
building. Yeah. Well, that building in particular was very small and very like semi-hole. Like, even though the outside looked like fucking, you know,
massive.
Dr. Death. Yeah. The inside is very tiny. They actually have to give you a warning that if you, because the hallways are tight. And there's one area that is all pictures of car crashes in this very small hallway that it's almost like a one-way path to walk around it. And they're like, if you get lightheaded, like, say something. Like, just, you know, they have, because it's so confined. There's another Museum of Death, Vegas or New Orleans or somewhere else, that is like more like a bigger open space room, but this is truly like they had access to this building. They filled it with as much fucking murder memorabilia as they could, and some of it is daunting. But it's honestly if you, that's something that interests you, it's totally worth checking out. Like, they set it up really nicely. Like, it's all
I just remember everything about it looked like a nightmare to me. Like, it was like this giant nondescript building with a huge skull painted on the front and a very large, like, prison, almost looked like prison security gate across the front. Whenever I'd walk past it, I'm like, There's nothing about this that seems like this would be a good idea to go to. So I'm glad that someone I knew visited. Yeah.
You know, I got another one that came to mind. Have you guys ever gone to go through the Salem Witch Trials tour up in Salem, Massachusetts? Because there's a wax museum there.
Yeah, I've even though I'm close in proximity, I've never been to I've been to Salem.
Salem's dope.
Being around from this area, I know that it's the worst place to go during October.
Oh,
even though it's like the energy's great or whatever,
but it's
I've never gone. We had Film Freaks played there during October, and that's the only time I went, and we couldn't go anywhere, and it was downpour and whatever. But I've wanted to go back to Salem for a long time to really explore it.
Go in the summertime because the weather's it's New England weather, and you just
Salem Horror Fest, which just reopened, is going to be doing their festival in April now, because they're October is too fucking much. They had it for October, and they've grown and become more successful, but it's too, there's a million things going on in October, so they've moved it to April now, which should be exciting.
I don't know if it's still there, because it's been probably 5 or 6 years since I went to Salem. I went there to officiate a wedding. But
is that right?
But I remember we went to this little dirt mall because the bride wanted us to do a photo shoot. They had a witch's photo shoot where you'd put on the hats and brooms or whatever. But inside that mall was the coolest comic book shop I'd ever been in my entire life, because they had comics, but then they had pretty much every single Full Moon collectible you could possibly imagine. And that's where I got, if you ever come to my house, when you use that bathroom, there is a tiny little porcelain ghoulie popping out of a toilet statue sitting next to the toilet.
Fuck yeah.
And I also got a giant Head of the Family statue that's somewhere in the basement.
And the fact that we haven't done Head of the Family on this show is just wild. And it's not even on your list, is it, Matt?
No, I do not like that movie that much, but I love the character design of the Head of Head of the Family character is fantastic. That movie is not good.
That's a slog. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, right. Dude. That movie is trash.
So do we have any other thoughts about House of Wax
I had to say something about the director, which I thought was absolutely hilarious.
Oh, yes. Is this about
his... Yeah, yeah. So this movie was obviously a big deal. 3D, it was the first Technicolor 3D movie to be released in theaters, but the director was blind in one eye, so he saw no third dimension.
It's like, I can't steal that. Can't steal that Can't Hardly Wait reference from you.
Yeah.
It's weird because I actually think that the 3D, watching it put to 2D, obviously, but watching, I'm like, oh, I could see how this is effective 3D. Then you had someone who had two perfectly functioning eyes that was doing Jaws 3D, and that thing's a mess.
One of my favorite lines is the last line, which, they, as soon as everybody gets saved, nobody had any trauma. Everybody's fine. There's no issue.
It was the 50s, dude. There's no such thing as mental health.
They're cracking jokes about the guillotine almost killing a guy. And then they say, quote, by the time this guy gets out of Sing Sing, he'll have a big beard. To which I say, no, he'll just have a mustache. Because they were referring to fucking Bronson and his bust. And then all the Death Wish movies happened. So, I love this prequel to Death Wish is all I wanted to say.
All right, so that's a perfect setup for someone to ask me about a double feature.
Hello, everyone. We're Superhero Stuff You Should Know. And if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance. We got action.
Romance.
We got comedy. We got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance. What part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
All right. So come on down to... Wait, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
At Maximum Mediocrity, people say things like,
I don't dress like this on the regular basis. This isn't my, pooping uniform. This is not.
And they also say things like,
The nurses are usually either angels of mercy or whores.
Every episode is a new experience where you get to know people that aren't famous but should be.
Why did my facing Floyd Mayweather in the woods.
My co-host Morgan and I track down the people you didn't know you needed to hear from.
It's like hot sex in a mug.
We are the Maximum Mediocrity Podcast, and we are on all major podcasting platforms. We'll be waiting for you.
Hey, everybody. Satan here. I know what you're thinking. Jesus Christ, Satan has a podcast now too? No, that's not it. But I am here to tell you about a podcast, and it's one that's all about my favorite band, Punchline. Not the band you expected me to say, right? You probably figured I'd like Slayer, or maybe some backwards Beatles records or something. Those are okay, but you usually find me rocking out to fan-favorite Punchline albums like Action or Lion while I'm torturing dead people for all of eternity. Punchline's podcast is called A Band Called Punchline, and it's super entertaining to listen to this documentary-style look back at the 25 years of my favorite band. Honestly, I'm really feeling like I'm getting to know these guys, and their story is amazing. I'm so ready for them to get down here. I have so many questions. I gotta give them credit for catching on to my whole 37 thing, too. There's a reason why they're my favorite band, and if you listen to their podcast, they might become yours, too. A Band Called Punchline is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Check it out, and I'll see you all in hell.
Matt, what's your double feature?
So, I wasn't sure what I was going to pick as a double feature for this movie, and then that final scene came up. And that final scene reminded me of another film, widely considered one of the greatest horror films of all time, that also ends with a very strange zero trauma conversation between like policemen and psychiatrists, which is of course the ending of the original Psycho, where we get like a 10-minute monologue about like Norman Bates' entire backstory.
It's called exposition, Matt.
Oh, dude, it is. I will never talk shit on Psycho. It is a classic for a lot of reasons, but man, you could just cut that scene completely out of the movie and I would feel exactly the same about the quality of Psycho.
I'm going to go off of that because I had a movie that also has Anthony Perkins, surprisingly, and my movie is Edge of Sanity. It's not a good movie. It's kind of mean-spirited and gritty, so it would be the B picture in my double feature, but it's a Jekyll and Hyde story with Anthony Perkins, and it just has a vibe that,
yeah.
Besides like slapsticky stuff, I mean, there's two obvious choices in my head that I could have made that I won't because I've already picked one in a previous double feature. But Edge of Sanity just kept ringing in my ears while I was watching this. I think there's like the landscape of it. There's sort of like he feels a little Jack the Ripper-y, which there's some correspondence with an Edge of Sanity. So that's my pick.
Yeah, I've always thrown that on being like, is this something we should do for the show? And then halfway through it, I'm like, no.
No.
But for some reason, it was very mismatched by Scream Factory because it was part of a double feature deep Blu-ray that they put out. And the A picture was Destroyer, which is like so over the top and ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I was like, these do not make sense as like a double feature.
Dude,
DVD.
I will Scream Factory fucked up there, but let me tell you the MGM 4-pack that fucked up with was where I got Edge of Sanity from. So it's Edge of Sanity, Whatever Happened to Aunt Alice.
Okay.
Ekis, which is the fucking horse play, like the horse based on a and then The Spiral Staircase, which is a beautiful black and white film about a deaf woman in it's like a gothic picture, which is the only reason I bought the 4-pack in the first place was for Spiral Staircase. But it has these other the craziest 4-pack that MGM was just like, I don't know, I'll fucking put it on this.
Yeah.
And then one of them is a double layer disc, and then two of them are single movies on discs, and it's like, okay guys, what is going on here?
Scott and I both bought the same 8-movie DVD at one point that actually is a pretty good collection of movies, but it's a whole lot of random, like, It's like Ghoulies 3, Ghoulies Go to College, and Bud the Chud 2 are on there. You know,
it's got Class of 1999.
Yeah, that's the one.
Yeah, I don't think that Bud the Chud was on that one, because that one has like, it has Chopping Mall, right? Chopping Mall,
76 Evil 2.
Unnameable.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like random ass sequels, and then like I bought it for Chopping Mall and Slaughter High.
I bought it for Chopping Mall.
Do you guys like Chopping Mall?
Oh, dude, it's one of my top 10.
Okay.
It's so fucking stupid, but I love it so much.
That response is all we need to know about if Kyle likes Chopping Mall. Scott, what is your double feature?
To the shock and surprise of no one, I'm going to go with Waxwork, because I just absolutely love Waxwork, and I feel like we've been talking about recently, last couple episodes, we've been like, well, we've really been using these 10 same movies all the time for our double features. And I'm like, I don't think I've done Waxwork in a long, long time as a double
feature.
In
a really long time. That was like when we first introduced the double features. It was like any excuse. Vampire movie? Oh, Waxwork. Werewolf movie? Oh, Waxwork.
Fucking Waxwork.
Well, that's the beautiful thing. Waxwork is an anthology movie without being an anthology.
Yeah.
It's fucking perfect.
Yeah. I mean, both of them really are. Both of those Waxwork movies are actually fantastic concepts on, like you said, you just make a bunch of shorts and then have like the best tie-in that any anthology film has ever had. Good call. I wish that we were watching that in June, but... Man,
it's
no
all
one
right.
wants
it didn't
to watch
come
that
up.
But us.
Matt, so what have you been watching, listening to, doing that you want to pimp out on our show?
Within the same week, Netflix dropped two things on their streaming site that are both worth mentioning. The one I'm not going to talk, well, both of them I'm going to talk very briefly about. The one is a movie called Metal Lords. It's fun. It's just a fun coming-of-age movie about two kids who want to form a death metal band and perform in their school talent show. And it's very charming. It's very funny. It's filled with a bunch of cool, like, heavy metal cameos throughout. And it's what Deathgasm wanted to be, is what I'll say. I had a lot more fun with this than I ever had with Deathgasm.
What was it called again? I'm sorry.
Metal Lords.
Metal Lords. Felt way more sincere than a lot of those other movies.
Well, that's why I got all that hate for Deathgasm when we did that episode all those years ago, because the only thing that movie needed was some sort of sincerity and enthusiasm for death metal, and this has all of the
enthusiasm.
Yeah,
this made up for it. And then the other thing, just I think it's one of the most brilliant shows on Netflix, and I feel like not nearly enough people talk about it. But season two of Russian Doll dropped, and like,
I didn't know they were doing another season of that.
Yeah, dude, if you like trippy, crazy shows, like season one is a nice little time loop story. Season two is a Quantum Leap type story.
Is Natasha Lyonne in it again?
Yeah, she actually wrote and directed most of the episodes.
Wow.
But it's every time that she goes on this one specific subway train in New York, she gets transported to different periods in time in the body of one of her relatives. One of them being her mother 8 months pregnant with her. What I like about both seasons of the show, but it really shines in season two, is that like, there is literally never a point where Natasha Lyonne is like, what the fuck is happening here? Like, her enthusiasm towards just like, I'm just going to see how this plays out. Like, she's just like living for the moment, doesn't care that it's like there's like an episode where she ends up in like her grandmother's body in like Nazi Germany. And she's just kind of like, ah, fuck you, you fucking Nazi. Like, she like just doesn't care because she's just like, whatever.
I fucking love that.
Dude,
that
Natasha Lyonne
is incredible.
Amazing. One of the most underappreciated actresses, I think, of like our generation. Because she's like, what? Like, I think she's the same age as me. And I'm like, what the fuck have I done with my life?
I just think that it's so cool that we're getting all of these mainstream concepts, or, you know, like TV shows and movies and all this, that are kind of playing with the idea of like the multiverse, because there's Everything Everywhere All at Once. There's Doctor Strange 2, Multiverse of Madness. There's Russian Doll Season 2. There's Moon Knight, which isn't exactly the same, but it's got like ideas of what is reality because it's playing into the MCU and, you know, other things like that as well that are kind of slipping my mind right now. But I just love the fact that it's kind of becoming a normalized plot device because it's real
fun. It definitely is. I want to say that something that has to get a little bit of credit for it, even though this was, shit, 15 years ago, maybe, at this point. But I feel like Lost was, like, a big proponent in that, just because, like, that was, like, a massively popular show that, like, was introducing stuff that anybody who read a comic book was, like, well aware of the concept of, like, but, like, anybody who didn't really read comic books was like, what the fuck is happening? How are there two of them now? And, like, I think that having such a massively popular show introducing that concept made it real easy, like, a couple years later when Marvel's like, fuck it, we're just going to do Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and they're just going to have to figure it out or fuck off. Like, I think that we've gotten that point where it's like, you either get it or you don't, and, like, just strap in and figure it out.
Dude, I'm convinced that Nope is about similar concepts, that, like, a parallel universe situation as opposed to aliens. Like, so I won't go into it, but I'm convinced that, like,
love
Nope
that idea
is going
I was
to break that open.
Aliens.
I was gonna say, I don't trust Jordan Peele to ever show you what's actually happening in that trailer.
Dude, I'm convinced that, like, the universe somehow is truly parallel over the other universe that it's supposedly a parallel universe over, and it creates some sort of, like, magnetic thing. I've only seen the trailer 3 times. Don't listen to me. But
we watched it once more than I have.
I've convinced myself that that's what's happening.
I love that. All right, who wants to go next?
Kyle.
I'll go next. I watched the Nope trailer again. And, you know, last night I took my mom to see, it was not a belated Christmas present. The Christmas present was for this date. I took my mom to see Pretty Woman the musical. I've never seen the movie Pretty Woman, but I know enough about, like, I know the story and all the quotes that have ever been in any compilation of that type of shit, right? The musical's not great. It's corny. It's like there's no real memorable songs. But, like, going into it was fun. Like, I had a great date with my mom. It was wonderful. It was just cool to, like, go. I don't know. It wasn't like Wedding Singer level, because I think Wedding Singer is, like, really pretty smart about, like, change, like, being its own thing. This truly felt like a, I don't know, like, it was just like picking up beats from the story. But Gary Marshall did the book and Brian Adams did the music, and there's, like, a handful of songs that are like, yeah, that tracks, like, completely. The second act's a lot more fun than the first act. I don't know. I just wanted to say that I took my mom to go see Pretty Woman, and it was fun.
I love that.
I love that, too.
Yeah, yeah. Because the other thing that I watched was Flesh Eater from Vinegar Syndrome.
Yeah,
I don't want to talk about
you
it.
Did. I already
talked about it twice on the Facebook group, and I don't need to fucking say it again. Hopefully my mom's not like, oh, please don't take me to anything else, Kyle. Your taste is shit.
Yeah.
You took me to Pretty Woman the musical and the Museum of Death. I think I'm done with this.
somebody asked her at work today, and because I was there, I heard it. And somebody asked her, like, oh, well, how was the musical? And she was like, it was entertaining. And I was like, okay, yeah. So we didn't. We both were like, this is corny and kind of lame, but we had a good time together. We don't get to do that often. So it was
fun. Well,
that's
sweet. Yeah. All right, Scott. Take us home.
All right,
on this topic, anyway.
I have two things that one I watched with Megan and one I watched by myself, and I have misgivings with both. So I am going to air my grievances. So the Batman, 2022, it had great segments, but I was very underwhelmed by the final product, and it was too fucking long. I thought that Paul Dano was great, but I really gotta say, everybody's talking about Paul Dano as the Riddler doing a great job, but Colin Farrell is an unsung hero of cinema. Like, no one gives him the credit he deserves.
In this movie.
Like, oh, yeah. I mean, like, I was like, hey, Megan, that's Colin Farrell playing Penguin. And she was like, no way. And I'm like, yeah. And I showed her pictures. She was like, I was like, this is what he looks like. And she was like, I don't see it. And I'm like, I know. And we're like, okay, we can hear a little bit of it. But, like, he was just, it was very, very, I mean, Zoe Kravitz was fine. John Turturro is fine. I like the fact that we get to see some Detective Batman, but I just didn't really, nothing, there were these shining little moments, and it had some great cinematography, but, like, the storyline really, I know what they were doing was they were trying to do a kind of a condensed version of The Long Halloween, which is a fantastic Batman storyline.
Are you the best Batman story? I would literally put my money, I think that
it's
is a phenomenal.
Top five. Yeah, I would say it's top five for me, too. I mean, like, I kind of go a little closer to, like, Year One, things like that.
Yeah.
Or, like, the Frank Miller stuff, but I really love Detective Batman. We've never really gotten a Detective Batman, and so this is the closest thing we've gotten so far. I like that. I just wasn't I wasn't sold on anything. And also, it only rains in Gotham. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. So anyway, it was a thing. I'm glad I saw it, but I don't ever want to watch it again.
I said this jokingly on the Facebook page, but I still kind of believe it, that it was so far my favorite horror film that I've watched of this year, because
it's
the Riddler is. Yeah, like it is like, oh, this is crazy. But what I also liked, like, I was talking to someone about it after I watched it, and the thing that I realized I didn't even love at the time watching it, but loved more thinking about it, is that I think this is the most fleshed out Gotham has ever felt, in the sense of, like, I remember Jonathan used to bitch about the Spider-Man movies, and his complaint was, he was like, look, you should start a Spider-Man movie where Spider-Man is, like, fighting some D-list character like Rhino. You know what I mean? To, like, build this concept of, like, oh, there's always shit happening. It's not just like this guy showed up in movie one and then it's just been petty thugs and then this guy shows up. So it's like, I love that, like, you're dropped into this Gotham where Joker has already happened. He's already been caught. He's already been arrested. There's, like, a legion of weird Joker people roaming in the subway system. There's this crazed Riddler guy out there killing people. Penguin is doing his thing. Like, there's already that, what I think is the best version of the Penguin, where it's like, yeah, he's a criminal master, like, he's a bad guy, but he's you can trust him enough to give up information that you don't ever want to put him away. Like, you let him be loose because he'll rat out someone else to you and he'll, like, give you information. Like, I like that it did feel like a very fleshed out version of Gotham City, where there's always a bunch of crazy shit happening. Not like that this Paul Dano thing was just a one and done, but it's just like one piece of a much more corrupt, bigger picture. Mm-hmm. I think is really cool. But all that could have been done in 2 hours.
Yeah. Well, yes. The best part about Penguin was when they're interrogating him, and they have handcuffed his hands and feet, and he's like, "Well, you can just leave me here," and he, like, waddles. So he actually get the Penguin walk. So, I mean, it was
all right. But what was the other one that you had some grievances about?
So there's a movie called The Seed on Shudder, and it's a goopy alien movie. It's only got three actors in it. All the women did fantastic. It had been on my watch list. I had a free night where Megan was out of town, and so I was like, I'm going to watch The Seed. So I started watching it, and I was, like, ambivalent at the beginning, and then stuff got goopy, and I was like, yes, I really dig this, and, like, it feels grounded, it feels cool. And I was like, this has to be an all women, since it's all women that are on screen, this had to have been, like, written by a woman, because it's like, it seems like it. I was getting a vibe. And then the third act hits and I'm like, I'm getting a weird kind of misogynistic vibe. And then it ends and the credits hit and it's all men. And I was like, this is a bad fucking fit. It's a bad look. It took away all of my good feelings about it that were building up in the second act. And it just made me feel gross. So yeah. I don't know. Like, if you're going to make a movie that has alien rape in it, you probably want to have some women behind the camera at least telling you if that is or isn't acceptable to push on the audience and the actors that you're directing.
Yeah, diverse writers' rooms are really important. Really, really important.
I think that, and look, I don't know. I too am just a white man in America, but I think that, like, amongst screenwriters,
yeah,
there's a quest to do something, like, amazing and, like, powerful and, like, all this stuff, and it's like, I feel it too in any of the work that I want to do, but at the same time, it's like, if I'm choosing to try to tell a story with or of an experience that I don't have direct correlation to, you have to lead with empathy. You yeah. can't lead with, like, I was there and it yeah. happened to me. You can't try to, like, inject it with, like, your thoughts on the matter. I think that, like, if and which I think is where the confusion lies in a lot of ways. It's like, you think you have to do that because you have to, like, you think that that's empathy, but in actuality, the empathy is just trying to, like, exist in the experience that happened, as opposed to trying to force a meaning or message or like a thing that you cannot tap into. All you can do is be empathic, and I think that that actually brings you to where you need to be, as opposed to pushing an issue. Again, I don't know. I hope that that's an answer to things, because I wrestle with that in my own writing about things that I have not experienced, but I would like to bring to the surface or talk about, to be part of a conversation without while acknowledging that, like, I don't have the experience. But I don't know. It's hard to, like, do that. Yeah. You know, but that's sucks so much when at the end you're like, fuck these guys, man.
You know, and right, maybe I'm missing people. Something. I you know,
no, like, but also, like, it's the subjective art form too. So it's like, yeah, sure. But, like, there's also somebody who either hates it way more than you or is championing it way more than you.
That's true.
And, you know, then the fuck either of those ends. You're fine in where you're at.
Yeah. All right. Let's dive into two quick emails before we go, because one is really
exciting.
Short. The first email we got is dated back to January 2021 from Travis. And it says, Star Wars book recommendation.
Yeah.
And the email says, hey, freaks, I loved listening to your Mandalorian Season 2 discussion. And during the discussion, you all mentioned how you liked the books Tales from Jabba's Palace and Tales from Mos Eisley Cantina. Not sure if you're aware, but there are currently two books in a similar vein that you might enjoy. They're both called From a Certain Point of View, and they are 40 short stories showcasing background characters from A New Hope and then the second book, Emperor Strikes Back. I presume that they'll do one on Return of the Jedi as well. If you liked those two short story collections from the 90s, thought you might like these more modern ones. Thanks for putting out the podcast. Take care. So I haven't had a chance to check those out, but those do seem like, I'm not a big Star Wars book guy, but if you're just giving me weird little short stories about background characters, that's like exactly what I'm looking for in a Star Wars book. But unless anyone has any thoughts on that, I'll go to the much more discussion worthy email. All right. So this one's called Cheers from Texas. And it says, hi guys, my name is Kyle and I do backup vocals in a black thrash speed metal band called Black Jackal. I also joined a traditional heavy metal band called Rygar last year, and both projects recorded albums that have been that will be released later this year. I also play in an Australian metal band called Bastardizer. We even toured Europe for a couple weeks. I love music and I love horror movies, and I have a weekly DJ night called Metal Mondays at The Mix, where I spin punk, metal, rock records, and play horror movies on a projector all night. It's pretty cool. A lot more people have been coming out since we started back up after quarantine. Luckily, most of them are pretty safe when they go, so we haven't had any health scares. I started listening to the podcast late last year. Of course, I was sent to work from home during the pandemic, where I could freely listen to music. Interviews and podcasts all day, as loud as I want it, while wearing my pajamas and inappropriate horror band t-shirts. I came across a lot of podcasts that weren't very good, and I think the ones I listened to the most were Horror Movie Night and Alien vs. Predator Galaxy. I'm a huge fan of sci-fi horror. It's cool that y'all talk about metal bands sometimes, and I absolutely love the intro. I like hearing about your movie pairings when you discuss the movie subject for your podcast, and I have to do that every week for Metal Mondays. I usually play two or three movies each night and constantly am buying new movies and records here and there. If any of you ever find yourself in San Antonio, Texas, hit me up. I've included a few pictures and I'll send you a couple links to some of my music and a picture of me breathing fire that was taken at a town cemetery.
God bless.
It's the cemetery where the opening shot of Texas Chainsaw Massacre was filmed. So when I discovered it, I insisted that we take our next band photo there. I also played the Texas dates with Finnish black metal band called Horna. I was their driver as well. On the drive between Austin and Houston, I took them to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre gas station, and they loved it. I don't get to do a whole lot of cool stuff with horror while over in Europe. We pretty much just played a show every night, except for those super long drives like we had when we had to go between cities in Russia. It was around that time that Alien Covenant came out, and I really just wanted to catch it in a movie theater over there, but I only got to see it when I came back to the States. There's a really cool horror theme bar under a venue that we played at, but the pictures were lost somewhere in the world of social media. Anyway, keep up the good work and keep an eye out for the next podcast. Cheers. and that was from May of last year. But I've actually also been to that gas station that he's talking about. It's a barbecue place that you can go to. Yeah.
Yeah. You can also get married there.
They've got, yeah, and they have the original van and a bunch of the old props from the first movie, like the grandpa's sitting in a chair in the corner and shit.
That rules.
It's cool. It's a cool, cool spot. So based on that, real quick, have either of you either been to a place where they're playing like music that you love and projecting movies that you love simultaneously? And B, have you ever gone to like the original place where a movie was shot? I kind of know the answer to that with Kyle because he took me to one.
I think I gotta say no to both, actually.
Really? Oh, man.
I don't think, yeah. I've never even been to the Christmas Story house, and that's just up in Cleveland.
So, yeah, I mean, besides the living in Pasadena brought me to a lot of the Halloween and other John Carpenter locations. On my honeymoon, we drove cross-country, and our first stop was Evansville Cemetery in Pennsylvania. So we got to go to the Night of the Living Dead Cemetery, which was great. That was probably one of my favorite stops. There was much more entertaining stops, but it was the first stop, so it was like it was meaningful. And yeah, then as far as places that have sort of done that type of thing, the San Antonio bar sounds amazing. I've been to the Hyperion Cafe, I believe, in Los Angeles, that does often did a, I don't know if they, when I went, they weren't projecting movies, but they were doing a full horror soundtrack DJ night. Like, okay, that was all they were doing, and it was fucking incredible. So, it was so fun.
So the only one I have for seeing a place was the Pasadena trip that you took me to, and the aforementioned Texas Chainsaw Massacre gas station. But I do actually have two answers for the other one with the bar. There's actually a bar that's maybe a 30-minute drive from here that I used to go and see shows at all the time called Oddities Bar. A friend of the podcast, both Cassettes and Johnny Neutrino both have played there. And it's this total punk rock bar. Kesha actually shot a music video there, which I think is awesome. But it's like all punk checkerboard stuff. But in between bands, they're just playing kill compilations from slasher movies on all the TVs. Great. And then in San Diego, actually, we met up with, when we were doing San Diego Comic-Con setup the night before the convention started, we met up with Joey and Josh from Fright School. And we were trying to find a place to hang out. And there was a barcade. And it was like free play arcade and pinball machines, nothing but 80s music playing in there. And all the TVs that night had different 80s vampire movies on. So it was like Lost Boys, Near Dark, Fright Night, like was just all across. It was awesome. Those are the two where I'm like, I don't drink, but I love these atmospheres and I'll stay and hang out.
Man,
here.
They have the best Coke here. Coke.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Just chugging these sodas. That was House of Wax from 1953 as picked by moi. We'll be back next week with even more Horror Movie Night. But if you have questions, send us some emails at hmmpodcast@gmail.com. Also, listeners, submit it. The floods are open. Let them in so we can figure out September. And on June 4th, we will be live on our Facebook and all of the Geekscape socials, just binging a bunch of classic Horror Movie Night movies. Tune in. We will definitely be raising money for a charity. I just still haven't figured that out at this time. But thanks as always for checking us out, and we'll be back with more Horror Movie Night.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.
Hello everyone, we're Superhero Stuff You Should Know, and if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance, we got action,
romance,
we got comedy, we got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance, what part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches, and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
Alright, so come on down to, wait, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
At Maximum Mediocrity, people say things like,
I don't dress like this on the regular basis. This isn't my, you know, pooping uniform. This is not
And they also say things like,
The nurses are usually either angels of mercy or whores.
Every episode is a new experience where you get to know people that aren't famous but should be.
Why did my
facing Floyd Mayweather in the woods.
My co-host Morgan and I track down the people you didn't know you needed to hear from.
It's like hot sex in a mug.
We are the Maximum Mediocrity Podcast, and we are on all major podcasting platforms. We'll be waiting for you.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.